I'm very happy now to welcome back to the show Ben Swan and Kelly Tribblehorn from the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. Welcome.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. Good morning. So always a pleasure to see you.
It's always a pleasure to see you guys and to hear about what's going on at the animal shelter and in the animal world, the domestic animal world,
well,
specifically.
You know what's and you know what's so awesome about spring is that there's so many things coming up. Everybody is getting out, walking with their dogs and letting their cats go in their cat condos outside, and it's just a wonderful blossoming time, and so we have a lot of events just to capture that energy.
Like what?
Well, we can tell you, Kelly, what's coming up even on Friday?
This next Friday, starting on March 30th, we do have a mega matchathon that's going to be down at PetSmart. It's a collaboration with four other animal agencies, and it's a big adoption drive with those other shelters and some animal behavior help, some adoptions, lots of fun events for the kids to do. All 3 days, we'll have a walk-in vaccine clinic on Saturday from 10 to 4, so should be a lot of fun and draw a lot of people. We're hoping for a big successful event.
A mega matchathon
is match.
Where you go to meet your soulmate.
That's exactly right. We have dogs looking for home sweet homes and cats too, and trying to get a lot of placements and get the animals out for spring. We've got a lot of sponsored pets that have their adoption fee sponsored, so those pets actually will not have an adoption fee, just a quick microchip licensing registration, so there's not a big cost involved with that, but we have some really great pets that are just looking for that home this summer.
And those are dogs and cats?
Yes, dogs and cats. We will not have rabbits at this event, but we will have the New Mexico House Rabbit Society there to help with rabbit education, nail trims, groomings, that type of thing. Easter is oftentimes a time when people are coming out to get rabbits, possibly for the wrong reason, because they're cute and fluffy, but they do require a lot of work and commitment just as well. So House Rabbit Society runs a Make Mine Chocolate event. So it's featured more around having a chocolate rabbit instead of a real one that could, you know, require a life commitment.
Right. Although, if you are willing to make a life commitment with a rabbit, which would have to be a home that is free of, for example, Jack Russell Terriers.
That would be a good idea.
I think
we do have rabbits at the shelter.
Yeah. You don't want to have a terrier and a rabbit in the same. But if you want to get a rabbit, apparently, which I learned on this show, perhaps from you, rabbits have personalities.
Oh, absolutely. Just like any animal, they've got personality and characteristics, and they're a lot of fun, and they're great little animals. But we want to make sure that everybody is getting the pet that matches their needs and what they're looking for in their lifestyle, and make that best match companion animal for them.
Now, the poster, which I'm holding in my hand right now, called Loving Pets Seek Home Sweet Homes, Friday, March 30th to Sunday, April 1st, Mega Matchathon, has a drawing or painting of a dog, which is just the most heartrending, beautiful dog portrait I've ever seen.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful? It's by artist Sally Sweeney, and we had a contest we just asked people to bring in to submit some artwork, and we had a panel of judges pick the best or what they thought was the most appealing one for our adoption event, and Buddy, that's the dog in the picture in the poster, won. So, and this is a real live dog. It's Sally's and her husband's dog. And it's just a wonderful story about how everybody knows this dog, she says. And so it was just a great little image to have on our poster.
That's a very cute dog.
And I wanted to mention that the House Rabbit Society volunteers will be there at this event at PetSmart on Zafferano on Saturday from 10 to 4.
Excellent. So what else is going on?
Well, you know, as we were talking about spring, there's wonderful things about spring, and there's also some kind of scary things about spring. A lot of animals go into heat, and so we're trying to get on top of that, something called we often call beat the heat. But right now, our off-site clinic.
You guys are so clever.
We try to be. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Like St. Patrick's, I don't know if that worked, but
I
loved
it. That didn't work.
I loved it, but not everything did. With the clovers, anyway. Clover Rover. So we have this special going on through our off-site clinic at 2570 Camino Entrada. It's that through a limited time, probably about 2 weeks, if you bring in your outdoor cat, or if you know in your neighborhood there's feral felines and you want to trap one and bring it into the clinic, we'll give you $5 per animal. That's right.
You're paying the public
right
to have their cats spayed and neutered.
Well, we figure this is an incentive. Like, you know, you do have to get up in the morning, or you have to make an appointment. You have to drive into town or somewhere, you know, to the clinic. And so there we go. We'll give you $5 to do
it.
And then, you know, you'll get your cat back, obviously. And if it's a feral cat, you can go and we have a wonderful Gatos de Santa Fe program where we sort of set you up and sort of educate you about colony cats and how we can really get on top of our problem in the city. And that's what we're trying. Really want people to understand that, you know, it's a spay and neuter problem. It's a human problem. We can stop it. We can get it in control. And this is just an incentive to do that.
How do you catch those feral cats?
There's several ways. We do have some traps available you can lend them out for a deposit, $50 deposit. You get it back. Lots of traps, and a lot of people do that. And it's really been working out well. We've got a few volunteers, more all the time, who are really concerned about the feral cat problem in our community, and they're trying to get on top of it.
Excellent.
Right. And not only that, so if you want to know more information about what I'm calling Fix a Feline, get $5, you can call a clinic at 474-6422. And this, you know, this special offer for $5 a cat does not apply to indoor-out-only cats.
Indoor-only cats.
We figured they're not a problem. So.
Yeah, that's true.
If you never let your cat outside, chances are it's not going to get into problems.
No, but if it's a female, there's going to be other cats howling
outside.
It's
not going to be much fun, that's for sure. So,
always a good idea to have them altered either way.
Yeah, just in case.
Eliminate that, and you've eliminated a lot of behavior problems with cats.
Behavior problems and 4,957
whatever that
kittens
astronomical number is
a year from now, or whatever the number is.
Cats are always very adorable kittens. Adoptable. But, you know, it's the fewer we have, the easier it will be for everyone.
Now, do you have any, I mean, besides the giant mega matchathon, do you have any particular love dogs and love cats that you want to tell people about that are at the shelter? He's holding up a paper with two love dogs and two love cats on it.
Yeah, just because I thought, you know, give you choices. Now, who do you really, really love?
Doppler.
Doppler, of course. You know, Doppler is a wonderful dog. He's energetic, playful, curious, and he's ready, you know, kind of for those manners and agility classes to really focus his energy. He's about 18 months old, and he looks forward to a lively family that will match him bound for bound. I don't know what that means, but that's
it means that when you go bounding in the woods,
then
he will
jump
go bounding with you.
Leaping like a rover.
Yes.
So he
like a rover.
Yeah, rover, clover. He loves to be outdoors, so I think people who are really outdoorsy and like to go on hikes and stuff would be great for this Doppler. Oh, and Doppler is sweet, yeah. And Andy looks almost just like him. Andy's actually a Finnish Spitz and Smooth Collie. She's 2 years old. She's sweet, timid.
She's beautiful.
Yeah. She is a little shy, so she like a lot of our animals that come in, they've had, for whatever reason, they're a little bit, you know, not trusting. So it takes a little bit to create that bond, that trust back, that somehow along the line got broken. And so she would really be a great dog just to just sit back with you and cuddle and watch those favorite movies with you, as one of our counselors wrote. And she does like other animals. So bring in your other dog and do a meet and greet. And don't forget the cats.
Yes.
Cats are really sweet cats. Maybe Kelly can tell us about Archie and Skye.
Well, I certainly can tell you Archie is a very beautiful cat, kind of a medium hair gray cat, maybe a Nebelung type mix. He's about a year and 7 months. Likes to kind of hide out in some holes, but does really well with other cats and likes some good laugh time. So he's social and would really do well in a house with other animals. Skye is also a two-year-old gray tabby that likes to be kind of indoor-outdoor. We have some outdoor colony rooms at the shelter where they're able to hang out and get some sunshine. And just really some nice animals down there. We're doing pretty good with our cat adoptions, but always looking to get them into homes quickly so that we can minimize their time in the shelter and, you know, keep moving through, keep helping the animals as they come in, because spring is going to be a busy, busy season.
Now, do you have situations where people come with their existing dog and say, we got to make sure these guys get along before I take them home?
Yeah, that's kind of, it's almost a requirement, because we want them to sort of see Well, it pretty much is a requirement.
It's definitely a requirement. Yes, we do require that if someone is coming to look at a dog and they have other dogs in the house, that they do bring them in for a meet and greet. And the reason that we do that, it sometimes can be hard for people to put their dogs in the car and schlep them all the way to the shelter, and they live, you know, an hour or more away, something. But the reason that we are so strong on that is because we want the dogs to get along. And oftentimes people don't know how to introduce the animals once they get them home, and they think, oh, I'll just put them in the yard together and they'll be fine and they'll be great friends. And oftentimes that can end in a little tussle here and there. So we want to make sure before we do that.
And clumps of fur on the ground.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Hopefully no bloodshed, but...
You know, they're just establishing a pack order or a dominance order, essentially. And that we have some techniques that we use to make sure that it's a smooth transition. There's certain behaviors that dogs exhibit that really show you if they're going to get along or if they want to play or things like that.
And what we want to do, too, is make sure that the match is correct for the people, but also to consider the animals in the home and that the match is correct for the animals, because they're the ones that are going to be living together, sleeping together and playing, that type of thing. So we want everybody to be on the same page and really want that kind of commitment.
And as you know, Mary Charlotte, having multiple dogs in a household is a wonderful thing. The dogs can entertain themselves, and they entertain you. You know, it's a good match.
Yeah, but they basically lie around all day waiting for you to come home.
Exactly. And then they jump on your laps and come.
Then they all jump and say, "Why haven't you taken us out yet?"
It's time. Yeah, my boy Zach lets me have 20 minutes coffee, and then he says, "It's time for a walk.
Let's go for my walk."
Yes.
Now, there is, a challenge coming up from the ASPCA, the National Association for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals.
That's correct. It's our 100,000 challenge, and we've done this before. We did it last year. And essentially what it is we're trying to get into qualifying heat. It really puts us in line for $100,000 or even more.
Heat is the day's theme.
Yeah, exactly. And it starts April 6th. And essentially, all they require is people vote for us by email. And we'll hopefully have that link up. We will have that link up on our website. Well, I'll send out email reminders, and maybe I can get you, Mary Charlotte, to sort.
Yeah, we'll put it on the website today.
We'll put it on the website, and that'll be great. April 6th through the 16th, we want to be one of the qualifying shelters in the nation to basically, after if we make this heat, which we hope to do.
How many votes do you need?
That it's really arbitrary based on everybody's voting. We compete with other shelters around the nation.
It's a nationwide contest that really the voting can go upwards of 20,000 people, 20,000 votes that you're trying to get, 20 to 30. I think last year the winning shelter had 28,000 votes, and that was in a community of 75,000 people.
Really?
So
very, very
it's really, really
comparable
say,
to us.
If they prorate it according to the size of the county or something like that,
right.
But it doesn't sound like they do.
They don't do that, and actually people can go on and vote once a day from their email address, so it's through that period of April 6th to the 16th, and what we're trying to do is really get community involvement. So if we can get the community of Santa Fe and the county of Santa Fe to vote for us in this ASPCA challenge, then the actual contest starts in August and goes to October 31st, the goal being to adopt... 2,000 more animals in that time period. So we're trying to really, really, really push the adoptions in that three-month period and win essentially the prize money that goes towards the shelter and developing programs and spay and neuter programs and various other things that our community could really use. So it's a very heavily contended for spot to even get in the challenge, and that's what it is now, is really just trying to get voted into being a participant in that challenge in that three-month period.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, vote for the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society.
Yes, thank you.
And you can do that by going to sfhumanesociety.org. And when will you post the link?
As soon as you can vote, April 6th.
April 6th.
Yeah. And then we'll,
okay,
we can
so
help
keep
people.
That in your head for another week or whatever.
Exactly. But don't worry. You can always email me, and I'll send out reminders.
Okay.
It'd be great. And then we'll give a little story about what's going on in the shelter every day, just so people an incentive to say, like, hey, vote for us because of our supporters and everyone who and the volunteers, and we're a wonderful shelter, and we want to be that even more wonderful and help even more animals out. So there
Excellent.
You go, Mary Charlotte.
All right. Anything else?
Well, you know, I just think people should reserve the date for May 5th. I know that's Cinco de Mayo, but here's what you do. If you want to really party down on Cinco de Mayo, what you need to do first is do a little walk or a 10K. Get some
exercise.
A 10K or a 5K or just a walk.
We have. How about a 1K?
A 1K.
That's up the ante a little bit.
It's down the ante.
Yes. Every year we partner with the St. Vincent Hospital Foundation and have this wonderful event called Pause for a Cause. It's a great event where people, you know, we have vendors, we have all kinds of things going on to really make it a fun event, but also it's basically there's nothing better than walking or running or hiking with your dog. So people come and bring their dogs, and we have these contests, and some people go to the plaza and back, and some people we'll have the Santa Fe River Trails open, and we've got a 10K spaced out around there, so it's a beautiful run.
How many dogs can you bring per person?
Well, we say one per person, but we're not going to, yell at people if they bring two. And hopefully we're going to have, a rent-a dog.
What about three little ones?
That's it. when I started adding multiple dogs to my household, I stopped counting and started just adding their weight.
You add their weight, exactly.
Yes. And I don't want anything more than 200 pounds.
Put one in a backpack.
Exactly.
I have one 55-pound dog.
There you go.
Divided by three.
Exactly.
Very manageable.
Anyway, it's a fun event. Hopefully we can talk about it a little bit later, but I just wanted people to really just put it on their calendar. They can register now. For that, it's only, it's a very nominal fee to get in. It's a fundraiser, as I said. It goes to support our wonderful programs. So,
Ben Swan and Kelly Tribblehorn are with the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society, sfhumanesociety.org. Thank you so much for being with us, and we will see you and all the future pet owners of Santa Fe at the and environs at the Mega Matchathon, which is Friday 12 to 4 and Saturday and Sunday 10 to 4 at PetSmart. It's Friday through Sunday, March 30th through April 1st. And PetSmart is at 3561 Zaffirano Drive. And there's a vaccination clinic on Saturday from 10 to 4. Bring your kids, and we'll see
and
you
have
there.
Fun. Yes.
And have fun.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thank
Always
you.
Wonderful to see you.
Likewise. I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Carol Norton and Angelisa Espinosa from Wild Earth Guardians. Welcome, ladies.
Hi, Mary Charlotte.
And Carol's been on the show before. Angelisa's new. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
So let's talk about Stream Team. This is something we talk about every year, and it's a wonderful thing that Wild Earth Guardians does.
Stream Team is something that we started 10 or 12 years ago. Probably that first year we planted 10,000 trees. We now plant 100,000 trees.
A year?
A year.
Are you kidding me?
And we plant them on various streams around the state. This year we're going to plant on the Santa Fe River.
So the purpose of this is what? Were there trees there that have been grazed away or eroded away, or what's happened?
All the streams are on degraded public lands that have been usually mismanaged by overgrazing. And so we've worked to lease the grazing allotments, kick the cows off, plant trees, and bring the birds and beavers back.
And so when you do that, you guys have been doing it a long time, right? It's been some years?
Over 10, probably 12 now.
And so that's enough time to actually kind of see the progress that's been made.
Absolutely. If you drive on Airport Road, south of the airport, look to the left, and you'll see where our river preserve starts. That's a place we've been planting for well over 10 years, and it's phenomenal. And you'll find willow flycatcher down there. You'll find birds that you haven't been in this area for a very long time, all happy and nesting and hanging out.
And that's one of the wonderful things, I have to say. I sound like a third grade documentary, but one of the wonderful things about nature. Give it half a chance, it comes back.
Planting a tree is the start of a resilient ecosystem. It's amazing how that one act can change everything.
Now, what actually happens in Stream Team? What do people do?
So we have several volunteers that come out, and we have a whole river restoration crew that's there. And we actually dig down into the ground with an auger. And we create these holes where we then take the willow or the cottonwoods and actually put them into the ground, fill in the holes with different soil, and just go along the river doing that as a team.
And those are native species?
They are native species, yes. If there's non-native species, like in certain areas, I know I've done it before on Ojo Caliente, and there's Russian olive that we remove and take away and actually utilize the Russian olive to plant it around the cottonwoods. And because a lot of times we'll have elk that will come and try and prematurely eat the cottonwood, so we want it to grow and flourish, so we'll put the Russian olive around it.
Because no one wants to eat that?
Exactly. It's thorny and awful.
It's really awful. Do you remember Carol Norton? Some years ago, I went to Stream Team, and we made a barbecue with Russian olive wood.
I do.
It doesn't taste very good.
You don't want to cook over Russian olive. Bad idea.
It has, ladies and gentlemen, it turns out there's, what, sulfur in the...
I believe it is sulfur. Yeah. You can taste it.
It doesn't make for a tasty barbecue.
What a horrible tree.
It's a beautiful tree, and I'm sure it's very happy in its native environment, whatever that is.
We sometimes... It's also a forage tree, so the birds eat the olives. When we take down a lot of Russian olive, we'll also plant forage trees to replace it.
Very interesting. So you're looking for volunteers to do what? A couple of days of hard work?
Actually, this year we have a Stream Team on Saturday the 31st from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. and we'll be on the Santa Fe River.
So that's coming right up.
That's coming right up this Saturday, yes. And the location is actually a 1.3-mile section of river from the bridge at Camino O'Leary down to Frenchie's Field. And so we've had the crew there for a couple of weeks, and they just keep moving further and further on the river. And
Stream Team volunteers are going to help us finish the job. So
exactly.
And is it fun?
It is fun. It's rewarding. It's visceral. It's an amazing feeling.
Mm-hmm. Do you take before and after pictures?
We have beautiful before and after pictures. If you go to our website, and in fact, in order to register this year, you do need to pre-register. You can register at our website.
If you go on wildearthguardians.org and you go to our events tab, we actually have an interactive calendar that's there. And if you go on March 31st, there is a hyperlink that you can go on to register. And the registration page will take you. It's $10 for each person who participates. And that includes a lunch and...
A day of planting trees.
A day of planting trees. It'll buy your tree.
And what do you hope to see along the Santa Fe River? I mean, is this part of what Mayor Koss has been hoping for with river restoration and get the river flowing again?
It is. It's part of the larger project. We're working with the city of Santa Fe to do it. There's a number of projects that are happening, but when you go out there or if you're familiar with it, starting at Camino O'Leary, going south, it's clearly been devastated, and really there hasn't been a lot of vegetation down there in decades, so we're planting it, and you'll be able to see the difference.
And if we should we live that long, which we hope to do, 2, 3, 5, 10 years from now, we'll see all sorts of wonderful birds, fish, and other creatures.
Yeah, you'll see a difference next year.
Really? It's that quick?
It is. I mean, you won't have ponds and beavers and maybe the whale flycatcher, but you'll have pretty big trees.
Excellent. Well, Carol Norton and Angelisa Espinosa are with Wild Earth Guardians. They're on the web at wildearthguardians.org. And is there a phone number that people can call for more information?
It's 505-988-9126.
988-9126. Ladies, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Charlotte.
I'd like now to welcome to the program Sharon Niederman. Her new book is called Signs and Shrines, Spiritual Journeys Across New Mexico. And she will be speaking tomorrow night, Thursday, at Collected Works Bookstore at 6 in the evening in conversation with Emily Drabansky. Welcome, Sharon, back to the Radio Cafe.
So happy to be here, Mary Charlotte.
Good to have you. Now, let's talk about this book, Spiritual Journeys Across New Mexico. It is definitely a guidebook. It's full of all the things that guidebooks have, like where to go and where it is and what the address is and where to eat and drink and stay and all of that. But the theme is the kind of spiritual and religious traditions of New Mexico.
Exactly. You've got it.
And so how did you come to do this project?
Well, you know, I've been traveling the back roads of New Mexico for many a year now, for going on 3 decades. And I myself am a spiritual quester. That is, I am naturally attracted to the kinds of places in the landscape or the built environment which have drawn people over time to experience the larger self, the spirit of the universe, if you will, common self that's bigger than our everyday life. And if I look back on my travels, where I've gone in my life, where I've been drawn to, Machu Picchu or Tikal or so many places around the world, the Buddhist shrines in Thailand, and that's been my path. So I think how this happened, and my best ideas always come to me the way this one did. As a flash, without premeditation at all, like boom. I think what may have triggered it, though, is a couple of weeks before I had that idea, I saw a great big, beautiful coffee table book that National Geographic had published recently, like sort of along the line of 100 of the greatest spiritual sacred sites in the world. So I think it filtered in, and maybe one morning I was in my think tank, which is what I call my hot tub, because I'm a Pisces, and water is my element, and that's where, if I close my eyes, you know, things flash upon me. And I had this idea, I thought, well, New Mexico is full of these sites, and why not do a book of them? And how much fun that would be for me to kind of compile what I had learned and to deepen and travel further along those paths.
So when you think about sacred sites in New Mexico, I mean, you've kind of made a pretty loose definition of what that is. I mean, Billy the Kid is in the book.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's so true.
And Roswell.
Yes, pilgrimages. Well, to a lot of people, I don't know if you've ever had the opportunity to visit Roswell on 4th of July weekend, but there are thousands of people from all over the world who have made the pilgrimage to Roswell. And you're absolutely right. It is a personal issue. The way I could characterize it is it's kind of a backroads spirituality. You're probably not going to find too much of it listed in the phone book. And it's an off-the-beaten-path spirituality. And the way I've organized the book is according to pilgrimage routes. And yes, a lot of people are seeking the spirit of Billy the Kid. A lot of people are seeking a kind of knowledge that they believe is available through Roswell and the connections that that represents potentially for the cosmos. And, you know, different strokes for different folks. And that's what's so amazing about New Mexico, is that we encompass all of this, and we encompass all these different ways, from very, very traditional devout Catholicism to Buddhism side by side, to Roswell, to Billy the Kid, to pathways of faith and curiosity and the desire to enlarge one's soul.
Do you think that as a result of having all of these different traditions, and many of them pretty well developed in this state, we're a less prejudiced state than other places?
I definitely do. I think that's one of our big attractions. And I would add to that, that's one of the discoveries that was deepened for me on this trip, is the, you might say, intermarried, mixed, multi-ethnicity of our state, which I don't think exists anywhere else but here. And to learn that over the past couple of decades, people have come out to honor their own multi-ethnic heritages as, say, acknowledging and celebrating, as in the Comanche dances at Ranchos de Taos on Ranchos Plaza on New Year's Day, when there is a group of dancers who dress in Plains Indian garb, outfits, war bonnets, paint, to honor the Comanche heritage that is theirs, because the Comanches did invade that part, and the community is very intermarried, and to celebrate it and to revive it. Same thing's true up in Abiquiu. Same thing's true with so many people now sort of coming out to their crypto-Jewish heritage as well.
Tell us more about that and how that figures into your book, the crypto-Jewish piece.
Well, In my observation, from the let's say I came to New Mexico in 1980. I'm kind of a newcomer, really.
1980? That's not newcomer, Sharon.
You mean I've arrived?
You've been here a long time.
Thank you. At any rate, people were very, very reticent, even though they might have had a perception or a knowledge that if they came from a traditional Hispanic family, they did not, or they were not comfortable publicly proclaiming that they may have had Jewish roots in their family. You know, I have one really, really good friend who lives down in Tularosa, and now she says, oh, yeah, of course we're Jewish. Everybody in my family is allergic to pork. And there were all this kind of folklore and myth about it, and since then it's been documented. There's a Society for Crypto-Judaic Studies. There is so much more known about it, largely through the scholarship of people like, there was no one like him, but through the leading scholarship of Dr. Stanley Hordes and others who have done immaculate scholarship in this regard to trace the families. And now it's, I wouldn't say it's commonplace, but I would say people are finding their heritage to be an inspiration and an enrichment in their lives rather than something that should be shamed or hidden or we don't talk about it.
And so how can somebody visiting the state use your guidebook to explore that?
Well, in the guidebook, I have provided resources, organizations, books, places of celebration, and people can kind of look through it and see what grabs them. And there are pilgrimage paths in the book, clearly defined pilgrimage paths. One place that I mentioned in the book where you can connect with the crypto-Judaic piece is the New Mexico Jewish Historical Society. I'm a former president of that and the archivist for them, and it's a wonderful group, and it's a place that is very accepting and open, and you can do as little or as much as you want, but as an entry portal, that's an excellent spot.
Another part of it, which is obvious, which is what a lot of tourists come to New Mexico to explore, is Native American Indian heritage, and you've got a whole section on Pueblo etiquette. Mm-hmm. What do people need to know when they are visiting Pueblos here in New Mexico?
Don't walk across the plaza when there's a dance going on.
Is that something you actually have to tell people?
You actually do, Mary Charlotte. I don't think that you can tell them often enough how to be respectful and what is expected and just the way to comport yourself. And I think that's nothing against the people who are visiting. It's just that this is so, this experience, that which they are seeking in their hearts, this experience is so different from anything that they have known before that they can feel confident with a little bit of hand-holding and instruction on proper behavior that they can attend and be welcomed.
One of the things that I thought was helpful in that section was if you were at a Pueblo dance or event of that nature, think of it as being in church.
Exactly.
Rather than being at a performance.
Exactly. And it is church. I mean, the plaza is a sacred space. And people don't realize that because it's so humble looking. It's a dusty old plaza. People don't understand the sacredness of the centuries of dances that have been performed there and observations that have been performed there and that the significance of it to other people. But you know what? I admire the Pueblos so much for the way in which they invite and include anyone who might have the tiniest bit of interest in their ceremonies.
So when you were doing this book and getting ready to structure it, how did you choose all the different, what would you call them? Well, the different chapters, but the different, would you call them shrines? They're not all really shrines exactly.
No, they're not all shrines exactly. You know how I approach this book primarily? As you mentioned earlier, it is very much a guidebook. You can find out where, what spa to go to relax, or what's the best roadside cafe. But what I really, really wanted to do, my ambition with the book, Mary Charlotte, was to write the pieces that are linking the travel sections say, the pieces on the penitentes or the alabados, because I wanted to try to answer the questions that people ask when they come here. And to me, that's what makes New Mexico, New Mexico. What are those crosses on the roadside? Why are they there? What does that mean? I can surmise, but I try to draw on my reading and my travels to synthesize that in a very accessible way in these little pieces that I wrote. And I kind of built the book around those explanations.
Talk about the penitentes. That's one of the things that people always ask about, and that is a kind of, to this day, somewhat mysterious part of our heritage.
It very much is, and I don't pretend to know a great deal about it other than from my reading and from I've been fortunate enough to know a few people who have informed me and been very generous with information to me. But there are two theories about the penitentes, and one is that they arrived here in this state through all the colonists who came up from Mexico, because they were relating back to a 13th century order in Spain. Another theory, less widely held, is that it originated here. And whatever theory you ascribe to, because nobody really, really, really knows for sure. Maybe some people have that knowledge, but it's not generally available. It was a lay brotherhood. The communities of New Mexico, say along the High Road, or even along the Camino Real, are so remote that they were not easily tended to by an actual priest. So this lay brotherhood took on a lot of the functions of the community in terms of guarding and caring for the rights of the community and keeping the community together, such as burials, making crosses to mark grave sites, tending to the community. And then, of course, we're coming up on that season, the Easter season, when they are most active. And there's a lot of sensationalism around the penitentes in terms of, you might say, what we would label as a kind of violence and self-violence in terms of the cult. I don't really know anything about that. I know there were some very, very serious practices in the past. I have no idea what goes on now.
Self-flagellation, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and there's also an order of women, I found out, called the Veronicas. And their form of penance was to walk with rice in their shoes.
Rice in their shoes?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Doesn't sound that bad.
I don't know. It sounds pretty owie to me.
It's better than rocks.
I wouldn't want to do it. But they also tended the morada and, you know, made the altar cloths and fed the participants. So there was kind of a sisterhood along with it.
We're talking to Sharon Niederman about her book, Signs and Shrines, Spiritual Journeys Across New Mexico.
And for people who would like to learn more, I recommend the writings of Father Thomas Steele. I found them very, very informative.
About the penitentes?
Mm, yes.
Ah, very interesting. Now, Chimayo is another place that you basically can't leave out when you talk about spiritual New Mexico. What can you tell us about this this destination?
Well, it's certainly a must-do if you're coming to northern New Mexico. And the Santuario is a pilgrimage site known as the Lords of America, famous for its healing dirt. It comes from a pocito, a little well that was actually a dried-up spring that the indigenous people used prior for healing. So it's very, very ancient. We don't really know how ancient. And the chapel itself...
Well, people take this dirt, mm-hmm. and supposedly more dirt comes up from below, but it's baloney because you find leaves in it.
Yeah, I think when nobody's really looking, the priest does
just
put in wheelbarrows of dirt. Yeah. But it's all about faith anyway, right? That makes it magical or makes it enchanted. So... on the walls of the chapel are crutches that people have thrown away, prayers. It's very, very moving. And that's where people go to make the special prayer of their heart. 300,000 people a year go there. 30,000 alone make the pilgrimage on Good Friday.
And people walk from Santa Fe, from all over the place.
From Tecolote, you'll see pilgrims. You will soon see pilgrims along the roadside.
That's right.
We're coming up on that season.
And it's such a beautiful place, Chimayo.
Yes. Chimayo is exquisite. And Chimayo has many, many problems. And a friend of mine who lives there, I said, how do you explain this? This is one of the
holiest... You mean the heroin addiction thing, all of that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A little bit of weird irony.
Yeah, and I asked my friend who farms her grandmother's 6 acres there and grows chili and flowers. And I said, why is this? How do you explain this dichotomy? And she said, well, my grandmother always used to say, wherever there is God, wherever there is great good, there is also great evil. And this is just the nature of the battle that we're all engaged in.
Another part of the book is about the various cliff dwellings in Santa Fe. And there are probably many more that are not accessible to people, but what cliff dwellings are accessible to people who want to go visit?
Well, not far from Santa Fe at all, one of my very favorite places, most moving, where I feel really most in touch with the ancient spirits, Bandelier National Monument. I haven't been there since the fire of last summer, the Conchas fire.
Right.
But I intend to go back soon. And you hike in there even a little way, and the silence and the magnificence of the cliff dwellings, it's got to hit you between the eyes. I especially love it in the winter when it's very, very quiet and the deer are out. And you can really feel the spirit of the place.
We're talking to Sharon Niederman. So you seem to, in all your writings, take on projects that basically put you all over the state of New Mexico talking to all kinds of people.
That's my favorite thing in the world, Mary Charlotte. And now that I added photography to my writing.
Are these all your photographs in
the book?
All
my photos. This is my
fourth. You're a good photographer.
Thank you. This is the fourth one I've done, and I find that it really enhances my storytelling, and the writing and the picture taking work together so, so well. Yeah, that's just... The amazing thing is, for as long as I've done it and for as many books as I've done about it, I never run out of ideas. The more I travel, the more the ideas seem to rise up to meet me. New Mexico is my muse, and I really feel like I'm in the zone when I'm out there, and I never know what's going to be around the next corner. And when I'm driving down that road, I think, yeah, it's a 2-lane road, but it is just so much my personal journey.
Sharon, who are some of your favorite people whom you met when you were putting together this book?
Wow. There were so many. It also gave me the opportunity to meet with my friends from around the state. Some of my most interesting people were the governor of Jemez Pueblo. Here's another deeply multicultural ceremony held every May 1st, because at the ancient ruins of Pecos National Monument, the people were pretty much wiped out by disease and by invaders hundreds of years ago, and the remnants of that tribe journeyed down to Jemez and became part of Jemez. And they left their holy sites there at Pecos. And a Catholic church, mission church, was built atop the kiva. And every year on May the 1st, the descendants and the people from Jemez come up to Pecos. And the people from the church in the village of Pecos process over. And together they celebrate their common ancestry. And this was a very, very moving time for me. And the ladies who were making the sweet rolls that they were baking in the horno shared their recipes with me and their traditions with me. And that's the kind of experience that you really can't have any place else but New Mexico. And another very, very moving experience for me was the blessing of the waters in Las Vegas at the Gallinas River. And that's where the Penitente brothers from Arroyo Seco came. And the head of the Morada actually invited me up and was very open with me and sharing of the ceremony. So I have found that just through my, you might say, naive enthusiasm, people all over resonate with that and are happy to share with me their traditions, which I then try to take and interpret in my words and with my photos to share with others.
Did you ever get the response, look, we've got a tradition here, but we don't want to share it with all sorts of tourists coming in, so please don't put it in the book?
You know, you would think that. And I think maybe I have a sort of a built-in meter for that, where I know when something is too private and I don't share it. So
yeah.
No, to be honest with you, the short form answer is no. I found really openness along the way and the desire to share and the desire to inform others.
There's also, which we haven't talked about, a kind of Eastern Buddhist and Hindu element to New Mexico's spiritual culture.
Very much so, Mary Charlotte, particularly here in Santa Fe, but also...
And Jemez.
Jemez, yes. And in the north, above Taos also. Yes, and Taos itself, of course, Hindu. But it's really growing in a grassroots way, I think, in southeastern Albuquerque, where now you have the establishment of several authentic Thai temples that are urban, like in Chiang Mai, and are very real and have festivals and followers. And it's the growth of the international district that is. We have more of more immigrants from Southeast Asia who bring their traditions with them. Albuquerque has been transformed.
Very interesting. What's it like there?
It's amazing. Well, first of all, we have a wonderful Asian grocery, Talin, and we have several other Asian groceries. That's just the biggest, and it sells international products and produce. And you have an enormous amount of Thai and Vietnamese cafes and restaurants to choose from. And it's almost like a little Southeast Asian district. That's why Senator Tim Keller had it renamed the International District.
Well, the book is called Signs and Shrines, Spiritual Journeys Across New Mexico, and Sharon Niederman will be at Collected Works Bookstore tomorrow night, Thursday, in conversation with Emily Drabansky at 6 in the evening. And we want to thank you so much for being here, and it's a terrific and very accessible guidebook full of great pictures and lots of information about New Mexico. So, Sharon, thanks for being with us.
Mary Charlotte, it is always such a pleasure, and thank you so much for having me on your program.